As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everyone. I'm really excited tonight to have Kayla Douglas joining us. Kayla is a life coach from Indiana who loves learning. She has lived with narcolepsy her whole life, and now, as a Rising Voices of Narcolepsy writer, is sharing her story to raise awareness and understanding of this condition. To learn more about Kayla and read more of her writing, visit her website. It's just kayladouglas.com.
All right. Thank you so much, Julie. I'm really excited to be sharing tonight. I wrote this story back when I did the Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program in 2018. And the idea was for this to be kind of a Halloween article. Like, that was the hook. We wanted to get people to read it for Halloween. I did kind of jump the gun and I published it a little bit early, but that's why you'll hear some Halloween references. So, scared of the dark, the narcolepsy symptoms that nobody talks about. One night around age 8, I was lying in bed thinking of the fun I had had that day with my family. I opened my eyes slowly to see a huge, hairy, man-like monster hovering above me on the ceiling. His appendages stuck to the plaster effortlessly like a giant spider, and I could see his gigantic teeth waiting to sink into my flesh. I was completely paralyzed, so much that I couldn't even scream. I lay there on my Care Bear sheets, trapped in my own body, unable to even clench my fists or turn my head away from the terrifying sight above me. He dropped onto my chest and I could feel the enormous pressure of his weight. The next thing I knew, it was morning. As a child, demons and ghosts weren't just for Halloween. They were in my life all year round. Sometimes it felt like I was trapped in a horror movie. I could see things that other people couldn't. The demons didn't come to visit any of my siblings. I had asked them, and they laughed at me for having nightmares like a baby. But to me, they were more than nightmares. I could feel the creatures touch my face, smell their breath, and hear them under my bed and in my closet, even during the daylight hours. Would you believe me if I told you these are symptoms of narcolepsy? When people think of narcolepsy, they think of the hilarious media portrayals, like the Argentinian in the movie Moulin Rouge passing out at the most inopportune moments. However, narcolepsy is so much more than sleepiness. It is a chronic neurological condition that impairs the brain's ability to regulate the sleep-wake cycle. It affects 1 in 2,000 people, and only about 25% of Americans with narcolepsy have been properly diagnosed. Every person with narcolepsy has a different experience with their symptoms, and they are often more subtle and invisible than in media depictions. To everyone who knew me, I appeared to be a happy child. I was a straight A student. I loved to swim, read, and paint. In some ways, I thought of napping as a hobby. I was a professional. I was constantly being shaken awake on the bus, at my desk, on the floor, or in the car. I was diagnosed with narcolepsy when I was about 13 years old, after years of doctor's visits, but nobody told me that these nightmares that felt so real were a symptom of my condition. I spent years feeling paranoid, afraid of the dark, and terrified of sleeping because I never knew what would be waiting for me in that place between sleep and wakefulness. I believe that the monsters were always watching me, just waiting for me to close my eyes so they could attack. Years later, as a curious teen exploring on the internet, I was shocked to discover that these demons can be explained by some lesser-known symptoms of narcolepsy, sleep paralysis, and hallucinations called hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations. When we all dream at night, our bodies are paralyzed so that we don't act out our dreams. Living with narcolepsy, the boundaries between being awake and asleep are broken down. So I was experiencing aspects of dream sleep while partially conscious, seeing things, hearing things, and feeling touch as if it was real. But I was still trapped in the paralysis of dream sleep. People without narcolepsy can also experience this phenomenon. In fact, about 1/3 of all people may have similar scary experiences, often during periods of high stress or sleep deprivation. People with narcolepsy may experience these more consistently. Dreams or reality? My memories of my teenage years must be much darker than the reality, but since I couldn't separate my nightmares from my real life, they became a part of my story. Not trusting my own mind to give me accurate information was something that I tried to deal with on my own. I kept notebooks and wrote down exactly what happened to compare it with what I remembered later. I felt like a burden to my family because of what they had gone through to reach my diagnosis. And my mom was so busy with all my brothers and sisters. I was already seeing a psychiatrist because of feelings of isolation and depression. And I was terrified of anyone finding out that I also saw demons. These vivid dreams weren't always terrible. In fact, once I believed I'd taken a road trip to Mount Rushmore with my grandparents, I remember spending days on end playing cards, cooking on the fire, and watching the fields pass by as we headed west. But it turns out I didn't go on that trip, and I've never actually been to Mount Rushmore. What else? In high school, I was involved in track and field, weightlifting, marching band, and FFA. Because of my diagnosis, my teachers didn't say anything when I slept through class. I sat in the back, and sometimes it seemed I absorbed the lectures despite being asleep because I never struggled to get good grades. But on the inside, I felt so alone. My outlet was art. Painting and drawing made me feel alive and connected to the world around me. One day, my pen started to tremble while I was drawing. I felt my fingers loosening on the pen and everything slowed down like a movie reel. I stared at my right hand as the pen slowly slid across the page, and I realized I couldn't move that hand, but my arm and shoulder were working fine. I don't know how long I stared at it in disbelief before I felt sensation returning. It was like the feeling when your hand has been sleeping and you finally slapped it back to life. But it all happened so fast, I wasn't sure what it was. As time went on, I experienced it more, sometimes in my face, my knees, but mostly in my hand. It was just another secret I tucked away about the ways my body could betray me. This symptom of narcolepsy is called cataplexy. Cataplexy is sudden muscle weakness, often triggered by emotions such as laughter, surprise, or anger. The severity and duration vary from person to person. Luckily for me, it's mild, but it is still something that's always with me. Sometimes I go weeks without experiencing it, and other times it's a daily occurrence. How can it be treated? There's currently no cure for narcolepsy. People with narcolepsy may use medication to mitigate symptoms. They may also use lifestyle changes like naps, diet, attention to health, and other support systems. This Halloween, I definitely won't be heading to any theaters to see the newest horror movie. I have enough creative creatures to deal with on dark, lonely nights. Yet now that I'm aware of what they are, I can recognize those devious characters in the moment and separate myself from the experience most of the time. Learning to live with these symptoms and accept my limitations is something that I still work on daily. I've tried a variety of medical treatments and alternative options to improve my quality of life with narcolepsy. My key message is that everyone with narcolepsy has a different experience, and what you see in the media is not an accurate portrayal. In many ways, it is an invisible illness that involves a journey of discovery and self-acceptance. Living with narcolepsy has never been easy, but I'm proud of where I am today.
Yay, Kayla! We're so proud of you for being where you are then and today. and for being part of this community. So many of you guys might already know Kayla because she's just been such a wonderful, strong leader in our community for the last couple of years. So
are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
It's just really wonderful to revisit this first essay. Does it feel like a long time ago or does it feel like yesterday?
It's weird, like it's both. Like in some ways it feels like forever ago that we were drafting and like I was going through the Rising Voices program, but then like in other ways it's like, has it really been 2 years?
And it was wonderful to get to know you. And I feel like, I guess I wanted to ask a little bit more about your experience coming into the program. And I'm not actually sure if I know the answer. What drew you to get involved in the program? Had you always considered yourself a writer? Because I know you mentioned here that you were an artist and you like painting, but you know, was writing something that had always interested you or?
Yeah, definitely. I had always liked writing. I think what drew me in was wanting to meet other people with narcolepsy and to like have that connection. I was a little more nervous about sharing my story with people who don't have narcolepsy. That was like the bigger step, but the experience of being in the program and meeting everyone in the program was like more of what I was looking for. And it was amazing. And it still has been amazing ever since. And then taking that step to like share it outside and like think about family and friends, seeing it was like scary, but so empowering in the end. I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah. What were some considerations for you in, I know you just said that, you know, you felt a little bit scared, but did you think about, you know, telling people in advance that you're going to be doing this or, you know, did you get any interesting responses from people that were already in your community? What was that like?
Yeah, definitely. I thought about it in advance, like telling my family and saw a few close friends because I thought I might need extra support after posting it. Like I didn't know what kind of comments I would get. The majority of the comments were really positive and people were so thankful that I had shared about nightmares and how like big of an impact they carry because they're really downplayed by the medical side, I think. And really there was only one negative comment that I kind of had to take some space and deal with. It's actually on this article.
Let's get to that. That's why I left it. Just go on. Okay. We had a beautiful response, a brave and honest piece. Yes, that's so nice. Do you want to read it or do you want me to read it?
Yeah, you can read it.
Okay. I'm going to be Mary. Sorry. Oh no, these are demons that visited you. Please look into this. You landed up having a disease due to the demons infesting you. They come to steal, kill, and destroy anything good in our life. Jesus set me free from the same childhood visitation. Please ask Jesus to show you. These ugly creatures will also attack your children. I hate Satan with a passion for what he does to little innocent children. Check out Scott Hensler's show on YouTube. So we don't mean to make, you know, there's nothing against Mary, but this is a very important thing to talk about, I think, for our community, because this is not one-time example of this. And it's happened to me a lot for a YouTube video that I shared about hypnagogic hallucinations and sleep paralysis. So we did want to highlight, not to put Mary down, but Kayla wrote a beautiful response back. And tell us, what was that when you received it? And did you know that you were going to write her back? Or did you take time and think about it? Or
yeah, I think I waited like a day or two. It was really hard. I kept wanting to go back and just like write out an angry reply. But I did believe some of the things she said as a kid. And like, I grew up in a very Catholic family. And that's probably why I didn't tell anyone that I was having these experiences, because you know, they were already worried about me. Like, why is this young child sleeping everywhere all the time? And like the doctors couldn't see anything. So obviously they were worried it was like a spiritual thing. And they were telling me I needed to pray more. And people are always telling me I'm praying for you. It was a very real like worry of mine that it was demons or something as a child. So her response hit home like really hard. And I assume there are other people who have had those same fears and same worries then. So yeah, it took me a couple of days to draft my response, I think. And And I just wanted to tell her, like, not to disrespect her beliefs, but this is my experience, and praying didn't help. Praying didn't take it away. So I told her, Mary, I grew up believing the very thing that you're telling me. Years of prayers never fixed the brain cells that my body destroyed. It isn't Satan or God sending demons to me. It's a symptom of a very real neurological disorder. Please don't ever tell a child with nightmares or hallucinations that Satan or demons are the cause. If they are beyond the realm of normal nightmares, take them to a sleep doctor for a diagnosis. So that was my rational response.
A great job responding. It's such a bigger comment. I'm sure a lot of people have had experiences of, I'm sure it's well-meaning, but I'm so glad that, you know, you articulated yourself in this way to say that it's part of a neurological condition. And how do you feel like if you wrote this essay today, if it was still your first essay, would you, you know, does it still feel reflective of, you know, some of those initial experiences and everything, or what has changed since?
Yeah, it definitely reflects where I was 2 years ago, for sure. But since then, I've really learned how to cope with the hallucinations and nightmares a lot better. During that time, they were like really present in my life. And even after publishing this, I was joking that maybe it like opened up the box and like made them worse again. But I think it was lifestyle at the time. I was like moving countries every 3 months and like big life changes constantly. And, you know, sleeping in hostels where nothing is familiar. So that all can like really affect my sleep and my experience with hallucinations. So today it would be a much different story. I can share like tips on how I deal with them and even like avoid them a lot of times by practicing like healthy diet and not eating around nighttime. Like if I eat within like 3 hours of sleeping, then they show up. So I like to joke that they're really hungry and they just come when I have food. So if I go to sleep and I'm hungry, I'm like, oh good, I'm going to have a good night's sleep because I'm already hungry. There's nothing for the nightmares to come feed on.
And I feel like you were also telling me when we practice that you really you're very deliberate about your nighttime routine and actually like prepare to go to sleep. And I think I talked about that on a broadcast with Dr. Michael Granier. I don't know if you guys checked that one out. He said it's like kind of like a plane. You have to like, you know, you can't, it's not just like the plane's in the air, you know, falling asleep is actually like a gradual process. You have to like take off into sleep. So how do you do that?
Yeah, for me, it's more of a mental process than like stuff I do. Like once I'm in bed, I'm like mentally like empty everything that needs to be done, whether that's like typing it in my phone or putting things on the calendar. Like I empty everything out. I usually do some sort of a meditation practice, whether it's like a guided meditation or just a silent meditation, something to just like get me in that calm state. And then I really like to like set an intention for what I want to dream about or what I want to feel when I wake up in the morning. Yeah, so those are things that like have really helped me. If I'm making a decision or like I have a problem I'm dealing with, I'll just decide like, yeah, I'm going to sort that out while I'm sleeping tonight by doing this. Like I'm going to go to two places I want to travel. I'm going to visit them both in my sleep and I'll decide in the morning which one I want to visit. Or yeah, I just try to use it to my advantage.
You've taken travel virtual. So yeah. People aren't traveling, you're going virtual with it. Guys, there's a whole new dimension.
Yeah. Lucid dreaming travel is much cheaper than airline travel.
And safer right now.
Yes.
So you just have such a long journey because you said that pretty much you don't remember anything prior to having narcolepsy, really, right? These symptoms all started. Yeah. So it's really interesting to talk to Kayla because I had a different experience where it felt like things changed when I was in my early 20s. And so I can remember a time before. And so it's just, I love talking to you about that. I was curious. We talk about perceptions of narcolepsy. So you had a diagnosis starting around 13. Do you remember thinking anything about the word narcolepsy before that? Or had you never heard the term when it was first brought up? Do you remember anything about like what you even thought it was as a kid? Or,
I mean, we didn't have Google back then, right? Like I was using World Book Encyclopedia to like figure stuff out. That's going to age me, but I remember getting a lot of like CAT scans and blood tests, and they were always talking about like thyroid, and I don't know, they talked about brain tumors sometimes. And like, because yeah, I gained a ton of weight. Like, well, I was just always a fat kid. I don't know when I gained the weight. Maybe when I was 3 years old, I gained a ton of weight. And then even as soon as I had all day school, I couldn't stay awake in school, even though I was like really good at reading and all of the school stuff. I just couldn't stay awake. So I think it's really different than the response people get when it hits in the teenage or adult years and they're like, oh, you're lazy, or oh, you're not doing something right. It was very much like, this is a medical problem because I was too young to be making the choice. So, but I mean, I didn't understand what any of the doctors were saying.
And how did you kind of, I mean, because you mentioned this essay about, you know, not knowing at first that the hallucinations were part of that. I don't remember, you know, so the cataplexy started a little bit later. Did you know at first that the cataplexy was part of your narcolepsy, or that was also a process to figure out?
Yeah, not at all. I just thought it was like, maybe everyone has it, or maybe it's like a separate disorder that I don't want to know I have. So I never told anyone. I think I was in my 20s when a sleep doctor asked me if anything like that ever happened. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I have that every day. Every coffee cup I've ever picked up, I've dropped, like, and I had no idea it was related until I was probably like 22 or so. And the doctors I had before that, like, because I'm not in a big city, I don't know if they had ever seen narcolepsy before. They definitely didn't know how to deal with it in children. They basically made me feel like, your life is over. You can't do anything. You should just like go to sleep and deal with it. Like,
wow.
Yeah. So,
thank goodness for technology, right? So that people can have access to information more readily.
Yeah.
And then what point in your journey, I think when we'd met in 2017 or 2008, like, were you already a big traveler? And how did you end up getting to that place where you decided to be able to go travel around the world?
Okay. So that was like a really long journey. So through like my teens and early 20s, I had a lot of struggles with mental health. I tried every medication that the doctors prescribed, and like nothing helped or didn't like come with side effects that were not debilitating. So by the time I went to college, I was unmedicated, just self-medicating, I guess, with caffeine and street drugs. And it wasn't until I was like 23 and I got my first full-time job and I went to a new neurologist in a bigger city, and they were like, there's this thing called Xyrem. And I was like, why have I never heard of this? And so I was on Xyrem for 2 years and I like got my life back. Like, I didn't even know what it was like to stay awake for like full days at a time. And once I had that, I was like, I have to go do something. I have to go live my life. Yeah. I like researched where I could go with Xyrem, like what countries would let me in and prescribe it. I applied for jobs in those countries and I said, I don't care. The first job I get, I'm going. And that's what I did. And I moved to Spain in 2014.
So you always had a travel itch, or, I mean, you like languages, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I like languages, but mostly it was just like the cultures. Like, I'm fascinated by like the music and the dance and the art and just traditions in different countries. So from a young age, I loved reading books about different places, or like National Geographic, or I read the World Book Encyclopedias a lot. So yeah, it was just 6 years ago when I finally was like, I have to go do this. And I haven't stopped since. Like, I have not stopped traveling since.
And so you, what was it like to be in Spain as a person with, you know, as an American with narcolepsy? How did you make that even work? And what was it like?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I think the first year I was there, no one even knew I had narcolepsy. I was just, you know, cruising on the awesome siesta in the afternoon. You can take a nap and then people go out in the evening. And I didn't drink of the Xyrem, but like, siesta was real, like in the South. In the North, maybe not so much, but in the South, it's real, very real. Even like the shops close, except for the grocery store. Like, so that was great. And then I think it was my second year there, the lifestyle started catching up with me, like no sleep schedule. And I got like a flu or something, and then I couldn't get over the symptoms. I was just sleeping all the time. So that was when I had to start like really taking action and seeing a doctor and figuring out some new ways to cope, because they wouldn't prescribe me Xyrem there, actually, like I thought they would. I made a huge switch to like using diet and lifestyle as my medication, and that was amazing. Yeah, I was in Spain, and they recommended like cutting out sugar and carbs and gluten and things like that, and just seeing, like, it wasn't like follow the diet. It was like, try these different things, see what feels good for you. And yeah, by like a few months in, I couldn't even like tolerate the Xyrem anymore. It was too strong. And I just like was able to go off of it slowly. And yeah, so since then, there have been a few times on and off where I've gone back to medication for various reasons. But as of now, like 2 years, I've taken no medication. So that really helps with traveling.
Yeah. So where else have you been?
Oh my gosh. I lived in Spain for 4 years. So every holiday I could travel within Europe super cheap. So I've been to like, I don't know, 20 countries in Europe. I can't even begin to list them all. And then in 2018, I moved to Asia. I'm living in Myanmar, or Burma, as they call it here. So I've been there for 2 years, and I'm just here in the US for the pandemic, and then I'll go back hopefully next month. So I've traveled a bit, like Thailand and Malaysia, Japan. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I'm trying to remember when you know, that was your first essay. And I mean, we've kind of said that was kind of a big deal, right? When you published it?
Yeah, it felt like a big deal felt like coming out as narcoleptic or having narcolepsy. Yeah.
And you have not stopped ever since, because you've been probably the most prolific writer in our program. Do you even know how many, you know, articles now you've published about, you know, health and your experience now?
I have no idea how many. No clue.
Well, if you guys haven't checked them out, Kayla did a one that was really neat about the science of narcolepsy and really broke down some of the newer science of Dr. Mignot's research, but in terms that are understandable. And also with like a personal connection and how, you know, that we look to that research. And it's just a really beautiful essay, both dynamic and digestible, but also, you know, talks about the science. And then I loved when you did the World Narcolepsy Day essay.
Tell that one was the most fun.
So what'd you do for that?
Yeah, so I was able to interview someone from each continent about their experience living with narcolepsy in their home country, which was awesome to like connect with all of them on like video chat and talk about these things and their different experiences. And then I did my best to whittle it down into an article. I think I had enough content for a book. But yeah, I really enjoyed that, and just seeing how different some of our experiences are with what we have access to and what we are told as patients, and even the community support we have available. And Project Sleep like connects everybody, all those countries and all those people I talk to know about Project Sleep, even if I didn't know about the organizations that they connect with in their home country. So that was really cool to just like see all the little puzzle pieces coming together.
Was there anything surprising that you learned in writing that article?
Most surprising. Gosh, there's so many things. I think maybe the most interesting idea was of thinking about Japan and their culture and how like ostracizing it is there to be sleepy, because their culture is like your worth is determined by how much work you can do. And I think America does have that to an extent, but there it's like really visible and it's pushed really hard. So that perspective was really interesting. Everyone's was interesting, but that one is standing out in my head right now. Yeah.
Which reminds me of something we've talked about before another time, which I think is kind of a cool concept, is when you have gone to a new country, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it is an opportunity to kind of reset. You create new relationships, and so you can reset expectations for those relationships, and you can kind of be a new person almost. I mean, not in a creepy way, but like, you know how we all have these relationships with people and you're kind of stuck in routines, but when you go somewhere new and you're interacting with new people, it's kind of a reset button in a way. Does that feel right to your experience?
Yeah, I would say that's true. Like the people I met in Myanmar don't remember, they don't know who I was before. So when I want to change something, like I quit drinking, for example, they've never really seen me drink. So they don't expect it. They're just like, oh yeah, Kayla will come. She will leave at 9:45 so she can go to bed at 10. And that's okay. They just accept that. I didn't have to like change anything for my friends there. So yeah, it's kind of a nice thing. And also you can pick up bits of people's different cultures that fit your lifestyle. I liked the siesta, so I can use that. Or, you know, certain foods from different places, you kind of take that with you as well. So it's really nice to experience different parts of the world.
Yeah. I even think sometimes when kids are going off to college too, I mean, college has its own culture. Every college does, but it is an opportunity to somewhat, you know, have a new routine that you kind of take on, which can be nice. We had a question here from Anna which is a great question, is did you ever meet up with anyone who had narcolepsy on your travels?
Not on purpose, but I did meet someone who was questioning whether they had narcolepsy. And after talking to her, she was like, definitely going to get a sleep study. And so, yeah, just on accident. But honestly, I don't know if I've met anyone with narcolepsy in person still, because I'm never here when you guys have conferences and things. And yeah.
Wow. So. That is so funny to me, because I feel like you are so much a part of our community that you would have obviously met someone by now.
Yeah, well, I do hold like Zoom meetings. So like, I know a lot of people and they come to the Zoom meetings and we meet like this, but in person, I can't. I mean, if I'm forgetting someone, I usually apologize. Like, but I can't think of anyone that I've met in person.
Okay, we have a few more questions. Sorry, I missed these for a second. So we have a question from Jill. Jill wanted to know, how do you cope with your hallucinations now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I learned a lot about lucid dreaming, and it turns out I was lucid dreaming from the time I was a kid, but like I didn't have the rule book, kind of like driving without knowing the rules of the road. So it wasn't going so well. So I learned about the rules, like, for example, having a tell, like something that you can see or do and know for sure that you are asleep or awake. So for me, I just like put my finger on my palm. And I do this during my waking hours sometimes, like pretty much every time I wash my hands, except recently because that's excessive. But I just like poke my hand a few times a day to be like, okay, you're awake. Okay, you're awake. And then you start seeing in your dreams that you're doing that. And in my dream, my finger will go through my hand. So I know I'm dreaming, if that makes sense. So you have to practice it during the day so that you'll do it automatically when you're sleeping. And then you can use it as your tell. And that way I could tell, like, is someone really breaking in my window? Or am I like asleep? Or am I like, yeah, totally asleep and it's just a dream? So that's one of the big things.
It's so important. I'm just so glad this is one of the reasons we asked Kayla to read this essay, because she has a lot of essays that are great, but just to highlight this part of the experience, and even hearing you talking about lucid dreaming, you know, and there's like a concept of yoga nidra, which is like dream yoga, which people like spend years practicing. And like, actually, I think we'd be quite good at it because we already kind of have access to some of what certain people would say is more of like a higher understanding or, you know, access to these parts. So it's just so cool. And it's just so important that, you know, to find different ways of reframing the experience and dealing with it better. So. Oh, we have another question from Iris. Kayla, I still have a lot of difficulty posting on social media about narcolepsy because I come from a country where they believe narcolepsy doesn't even exist. Iris, you're gonna make me cry. She says, how did you overcome that feeling of being embarrassed telling people?
Yeah, having a supportive community is so helpful. Like if you reach out on Facebook, there's Facebook groups, like my favorite Facebook group is Positively Narcolepsy. I don't know if anyone is in that group, but the owner of the group, Dawn Super, keeps everything positive. So you can talk about your problems, but she helps you frame it in a way that's like not devastating. It's really amazing. And having those type of people behind you, and maybe you can start taking small steps, sharing in a supportive group, and then slowly move towards sharing more on a large scale might be a way to do it if that feels right for you.
Yeah, I'd say that we, exactly what Kayla said, is that when you find other people like your social media world, Iris, because I know that we have talked a bunch on social media. So when you find that community, it gives you a sense of, oh yeah, this is real. And you know that. But then when you have to go back to your own, you know, actual physical reality, and that people don't think it exists, that must be so tough. And so in my experience, it's been more like a few people maybe don't think narcolepsy exists, but other people can. But to have a whole culture that might not think it exists must be really tough. So don't think we really have a solution for that entirely, except for, you know, continuing to raise awareness. And I imagine that there are people like you also, you know, with other things that maybe people don't think that exists, you know, and finding, not maybe they don't have narcolepsy, but maybe they have other conditions or chronic conditions or invisible conditions, and hopefully finding support from people that are going through similar stuff. And we love you, Iris, and we know that your condition is real. I was interested to know, do you still do any art or painting?
Yeah, I've gotten more into like digital art recently. I like have the Apple Pen, and it's much easier for travel to carry Apple Pen and an iPad than like paints and brushes and all of that. So yeah, I still do a lot of art. And when I can, I paint. I love painting. So
like, what kind of like landscapes or?
No, everything is abstract. I just like really wild colors. And if you look at my Instagram, a lot of it now is stuff I've drawn just recently. I started sharing like my own drawings and just a lot of wild colors and art. Yeah, just.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And do you find that relaxing, I imagine?
Oh, yeah. Like I can lose a whole day doing it, though. That's one of the reasons I don't get out the paints too often, because I might start in the morning and then it's like suddenly night and I'm like, what did I do today besides cover every surface I could find with paint? I do a lot of like upcycling, like painting, you know, plastic bottles and boxes, and like and then I plant things in them and yeah, I go crazy.
Oh, cool. Come live here and paint things in my corner. Jill asks, how is your schedule?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, so I do keep a pretty strict sleep schedule. That's really important for me. I wake up between 7 and 7:30 every day, and I really, really try to get out of bed. Like, that is my like biggest tip if you're struggling to get up in the morning, is when you wake up naturally, just get out of bed. Because if I don't get out of bed, I'll go back to sleep for hours, and it doesn't feel as what is it called? Like the sleep is not restful. So it's kind of frustrating to wake up and be like, oh, I just slept 2 hours this morning and now I feel worse than when I woke up the first time. I get up at like 7 or 7:30 and then drink a ton of water. That's like my first thing in the morning, is I drink at least a glass, sometimes two, of water. And then nighttime, I do not stay up past 10 or 11. 11, I'm like turning into a pumpkin. So I try to keep that as much as I can. And it really varies on naps. I don't keep like the same nap schedule every day, but if I need a nap, I nap for 15 or 20, probably maximum 15 minutes once or twice a day. But yeah, it's sleep schedule is like one of the most important things I learned using cognitive behavioral therapy to like really train myself to keep the same sleep and to be strict about it. Like the same way I would be strict if I was taking a prescription medication, like use that same type of scheduling. I recommend trying it if you haven't. Anyone who's struggling with sleep, the scheduling is awesome.
Yeah, that's such a good point, to really schedule it like you would a medication.
Yeah, I mean, Xyrem was good training. You needed a lot of preparation and like scheduling for Xyrem. So that was like good training to be like, hey, even if I'm not taking medication, just treat this as like free medicine. Go to sleep at a regular time and wake up at a regular time.
I just love that you've explored so much because everybody is different. Everybody is different, and what's going to work for them. And, you know, through this program, it's mostly about raising awareness about narcolepsy and the basic symptoms, but it's also important for people to realize that there's no one solution, there's no cure, and that everyone approaches it differently. And I think Kayla has really been so brave, and maybe, I mean, that's not probably, I don't know, that sounds weird, because I know it's out of necessity. You know, it's not like you did these things just on a whim, like you did them to feel better. And I just think it's so cool. A lot of what you've tried is really awesome. So two more questions. Iris said, how do you feel that narcolepsy affects your memory?
I struggle a lot with remembering what was real and what was a dream as a kid. Like I asked my mom all the time, like, did we really do that or did I dream this? That's really hard for me since I hadn't learned how to distinguish dreams from reality. But as far as now, like affecting my memory, I don't have any like memory problems from narcolepsy now. When I'm sleep deprived, then yeah, like short-term memory is really tough. Like, where's my phone? Where are my keys type things? But nothing that I would consider like worrying. I know I've heard other people like worry a lot about their memory with narcolepsy, but like Julie was saying, everyone is different. And I do a lot of stuff like brain health. Like I just research what's good for your brain and I take brain health vitamins and I'm always studying a language. Like I really work to keep my brain healthy because Alzheimer's and stuff does run in my family. So regardless of narcolepsy, I would probably do those things.
And then Meryl wants to know, it sounds like you sleep through the night. What helps you to sleep through the night?
I do sleep through the night surprisingly well lately. Should knock on some wood now, but for me, the big thing is diet. Like if I go off of my low carb, low sugar for even 1 or 2 days, my sleep deteriorates drastically. I wake up a lot more. I toss and turn. The nightmares show up. But when I'm doing no sugar and very few carbs, I do quite well on my sleep. And also mindfulness, meditation, and just like training the brain to slow down in the evening. And like I said before, like choosing your intention for what you want out of that night of sleep really helps. And sometimes I forget to do that and I wake up at like 1 a.m. and I just do that then. And then I'll sleep the rest of the night usually. So if you just start practicing it and make it a routine, that's what's helpful for me. I don't know if everyone has that experience with like when they set intentions and meditate, but it's really been good for me.
What's next for you? I mean, you think you'll go back to, I say it wrong, Myanmar?
Yeah, Myanmar. Yeah, I hope we can go back. my partner works there, so I plan to go back. Yeah, I'm still doing a coaching business, helping people with mindset. And a lot of it is like removing old traumas and things that contribute to symptoms and contribute to mental health as well as narcolepsy. I feel like when my mental health was suffering, my narcolepsy was much worse, like the sleepiness and the cataplexy and everything. So that is what I'm most passionate about, is just helping people to be empowered to deal with those things on their own and to get better quality out of their life. That's my plan.
Well, thank you, Kayla, and thank you for helping to raise awareness about the condition in general. That's what, you know, we're passionate about, to make sure that people can find what's wrong with them first, or find a diagnosis. Maybe it's not what's wrong with them, maybe it's what's right with them. We've kind of had, you know, is it neurodiversity is important. We have, you know, interesting discussions about that, but find a diagnosis so they actually know what they're dealing with before they can even take next steps to try to find improvements. So we're just so, so glad that you're part of this community. It's been amazing to watch you, you know, I feel like a big sister or something, you know, which I'm not really old, I don't know how old you are versus that, but like just seeing you over the last couple of years come into your own and be such a leader is such a joy for me. So, and thank you for all the support that you give to this community.
I really appreciate you building the community, truly. Like, I have no idea what I would do without it.
That's great. I mean, well, it's been fun. It's all these great people that are probably listening. So thank you guys for listening. Thanks again, Kayla, for sharing tonight.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, bye for now.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.